This is the Hear Hear podcast. Tonight we are joined by Leah Waldron and Laura Potter to talk about community outreach. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us. Happy to be here.
Awesome. Happy New Year, everybody. So I think a lot of people are recognizing some of the needs in their communities and maybe looking for a way to get involved and exactly what the pathway is to that. I think your guys' story as friends speaks to that. Leah, if you want to open it up, how did you guys actually, where did you actually meet?
So we met through the Edmund Niles Hike Reserve, which is a nature preserve in southwestern Albany County in a town called Rensselaerville. Laura and I became co-workers and fast friends soon after that. And I think we both connected on our passion for serving our community and engaging local people in activities that support mental health, physical health, spiritual health, if that's what it is for some people. And yeah, I think that's what kicked off our friendship.
Laura, what was the starting point for getting involved in that nonprofit?
Yeah, so I was back in the area. I'm originally from Gilboa, and Leah is also a local. And yeah, so I was back in the area. I've been living in the city for a little while and felt passionately about giving back to the community and being a part of something that I thought was great. The Nature Preserve was an outlet for that. It's a biological research center, which was really interesting, and they do a lot to help promote environmental stewardship, and that's something that has always been important to me. So I wanted to be a part of it, and meeting Leah was very inspiring, first as friends and through work and all the work that she did through the nonprofit. So, yeah.
I love that, because I think there's a lot of people will leave their hometown and go on, you know, their own kind of quest to find their direction in life. And upon return, they maybe have learned enough to really recognize some of the areas that their communities are in need of. And then recognizing how beautiful the areas that they live are. I think for us particularly, this area is beautiful and you know, holds a special place in our hearts. And you leave and come back and are very aware of some of the things that you loved growing up and are different from the places that you've lived. So I think that's pretty universal, is to go away and come back and be like, I want to do something wholesome for my community. You guys are kind of both on the pointy end of the spear for community efforts. Laura, do you want to talk about your project in Stanford?
Yeah, absolutely. So the grant you'd like to start with?
Well, I'll talk about your women's health project,
yeah,
actually.
Absolutely.
That would be great.
Yeah, so 2 years ago, we started an initiative. It's called a period party, and our main goal is to get menstrual products to folks in need in our community. So these period products are a human right to have access to, but many people face financial barriers to these products. And I had spent, after our time at the Hike Preserve, I spent time in Colorado, lived in Denver, and I went to a period kit making party in Denver through an organization that would give the products to folks experiencing homelessness or even college students who, for whatever reason, maybe weren't able to go home and didn't have the financial means to afford these products. So I was really inspired by those initiatives, and I really wanted to bring it back to our communities here in the Catskills. So yes, I live outside of Stanford in Harpersfield now, but this was a multi-town initiative. There were many businesses in Windham who helped out, like the Windham Pharmacy put a box there for people to do donations. The Windham Library, Tap House helped out, What the Soap when they were on Main Street. All of these various businesses. And so we had Windham, we had Middleburg. This was really Delaware County, Greene County, Schoharie County, and Albany County. And we got a bunch of donations and had an event at Rockland Cider Works, and we put together packs, and then those packs got distributed to people in need. So different spaces like libraries and food banks. A lot of products have gone to the Free Mart in Hunter, run by the Phoenix Web Collective. So it was, yeah, it was very inspiring to see so many people come out for such an important cause. And we ran it again this year, and we had just under, I think it was 6,000 individual products that then were distributed to our community members.
Oh, that's
so
amazing.
Yeah, it's been so great to see grocery stores helping out, like Jim's Great American in Prattsville, Valley Market in Middleburg. They've put boxes out each year and are happy to do it. And it's honestly a win-win too, because people buy the products there and then put them in the boxes. So, so that works out well. But yeah, it's very important for people to have access to these health and hygiene products. And it really is a barrier. They're not often available at food banks. Food banks don't often have the funding for menstrual products, and also they're usually not covered by programs like SNAP or WIC. So a lot of people are faced with choices like, do I buy these food items at the store, or do I buy these necessary hygiene products?
And I think in some of our conversations, that speaks to a broader, you know, kind of issue with this, and an understanding and an investment into research on these essential products.
Absolutely. Yeah, so my entry point into caring about menstrual cycles, other than having a menstrual cycle myself, is really the lack of understanding that I had growing up, and really until about probably age 25, when actually, Leah, you suggested a book to me, which is called Woman Code by Elisa Vitti. And it really goes in depth of how your menstrual cycle actually affects your entire life. It's known as the fifth vital sign. So very important for your long-term health. And I was an athlete growing up and played soccer, and all through that time struggled in my later years with injuries. And I started to put together the pieces that I was training in this super intense way that wasn't taking the menstrual cycle into account. Then come to find out that actually only 4 to 6% of sports science research is actually done on women, and it's typically done at a time when women most represent men by the hormonal phase of their cycle. So the reason for this is to test on women. You have to run these tests for extended periods of time to cover the four phases of the menstrual cycle in any given month, and it requires doing things like blood work. So it's more expensive, and this shows up in healthcare pretty much across the board for women. So I started putting together all these pieces of, oh, I think that if I had this information, I could have actually prevented a lot of the injuries that occurred over that time. And then that kind of snowballed into learning more and more about period poverty and lack of access and education.
Yeah, a recognition of a broader problem.
Absolutely.
But definitely in the rural communities that were a part of, a lack of education on it, in a very, as a broad stroke, a lack of education.
Absolutely. And it's a, you know, it can be called a taboo subject. I think a lot of people have fear around talking about it, but really, the more you do, the more normalized it becomes. And prior to Leah showing me that book, actually, my college coach, who is a man, and I'm still close with him, Kev, shout out to Kev, he brought in someone to speak to us about our menstrual cycles and about how nutrition plays a role, and, you know, these training how you need to tailor your training to the menstrual cycle. So that was kind of like the first seed of thought. And honestly, it was his I think that's pretty courageous of him to approach a subject when he knows that he's not personally experiencing it, but it, I think he recognized it as his responsibility as a leader of female athletes to help educate them.
So. Yeah. And a recognition, right? A recognition of the difference between male and female athletes, and then prioritizing the individual's health over some taboo or stigma or something, where opening up the conversation to say, hey, like, what is actually the best for my people, right?
Absolutely.
And kind of breaking down a barrier. That's, yeah, shout out to that guy.
Yeah, yeah. Kevin Davies.
Coach Kev. Shout out Coach Kev.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Leah, on the nutrition side, you're the truck driver, the delivery driver.
Yes.
So tell us about your how long have you been involved in the produce distribution?
This was my first year being involved with the Schenectady City School District's Farm to Family Wheels program. They received a grant to purchase a refrigerated box truck, as well as a grant through New York State to purchase produce and dairy and meat products from New York-based farms. And so this year was the first year that we drove around a box truck in Schenectady with a bunch of produce and milk and eggs and halal meat. And we would stop at four or five different stops throughout the city and open up the back of the box truck and set up a nice little farm stand and disperse those products free of charge.
How many people did you serve?
I would say towards the end, when people caught on what was happening, what we were doing, we probably would serve around 200 people every evening. And during the summer, we would run it during the day to kind of coincide with the Schenectady City School District also implements a summer meals program through USDA funding, where they set up sites where kids can come and receive free lunches throughout the summer when the school's off. Not in session,
yeah.
Right? Because that's a big time of risk, and food insecurity definitely increases when public school districts are not in session. So that has been my experience. I'm currently in grad school for nutrition and dietetics. I'll be graduating in May and hopefully becoming a registered dietitian soon after that. And so that's how I got involved down in Schenectady. But like Laura was touching on before, my passions definitely lie in rural communities. That is where my family is from, and that is how I was raised and where I come from. And so I think, speaking to what you were saying before, Jesse, of like feeling the need to go away, learning some things and bringing it back home is kind of something that I find myself in right now, and that I have found myself in years past, but that's most recent to what's happening in my life right now. And also just giving back to a community that has raised you, and also recognizing areas of need through having been raised in a rural area such
area
as this.
Yeah.
And knowing what you could give back through your skill sets and your passions.
Well, we use the term food desert.
Yes.
Oh, you had an alternative for that.
Food desert is great to know that that exists. Food apartheid is also a term that is used, because the saying is that a desert is something that occurs naturally, or in today's world, perhaps occurs because of climate change and global warming. But food apartheid is basically like
a very calculated
control. human implemented divide of like, okay, we're going to incentivize, let's say, a store that is going to make a lot of money, bring in a lot of people, but is it going to serve the highest good for the people that are surrounding it, right? Like putting in a lot of people like to structure the idea of food apartheid or food desert as an example in inner cities, right? Instead of having a nice grocery store coming in to a underserved area, you put a McDonald's in, or not you, but the city council or whoever decide the planning board, which I know you have experience with, obviously. Yeah. You're coming from a rural aspect, but so just understanding what gets prioritized and why it gets prioritized and what falls to the wayside, which could be potentially detrimental to many generations of people if people are not being fed well or having access to being fed well.
Yeah. So was it a recognition of the food deserts or food access issues that perked your interest in nutrition, or was it your learning about nutrition that made you look into who had access to that nutrition? Which way did it go?
I think,
or was it both at the same time?
I think it was both at the same time. Yeah. I, from a fairly young age, have always been interested in science, and I'm a big fan of chemistry. I find it endlessly fascinating, and as time went on and I spent more time living and learning and studying, I fell in love with plants and gardening and understanding food and food systems. And so you have food, you have farming, you have food production, you have food procurement, you have food preparation, which is something I love, cooking, working in restaurants and serving people, tying that in with chemistry, right? And then the human body and health, and then supporting your own health, supporting your family's health, supporting your friends, and then supporting your community. It's just like, I find it very fascinating, really, and also inspiring. And
it's funny because it's almost, it's one of the most basic necessities.
Right. I mean, cities and kingdoms and empires have been built on the trade of food.
The rise and fall of access to food.
Right. And salt and...
Yeah. So you were talking about being able to reach, you know, 200 plus people in a very short time, but you're talking about in a very populated area like Schenectady.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that transition, or how does that same access look if you were trying to provide the same service in a rural environment?
And I think I'm still chewing on that idea, or chewing on that problem, right? Mm-hmm. It's like being down in Schenectady, a lot of the farms that we are getting produce from are coming from Schoharie County, Schoharie Valley, which is great because Schenectady is not too far from us. But it's like, okay, all this produce is coming down into the city, and I've seen it in the Hudson Valley, right? A lot of produce is grown. A lot of farms are ran in the Hudson Valley, but a lot of that is being brought down to the city because that's where you are going to be making...
Yeah, your ROI is higher down there.
Yes, your return on investment is definitely greater. And people need to do that in order to survive. So trying to think about bringing it up here, it's like that business model or that structure is not going to happen, right? We're not going to drive 5 minutes down the road from Main Street Wyndham. We're not going to have... There's never going to be 200 people that show up in 10 minutes or 50 people that show up in 10 minutes. So just trying to think of a way of supporting local farms around the mountaintop and the surrounding farming regions, and also getting that food to individuals in need or who want it, and also making that all lucrative for everybody, right? Nobody's losing out. The farmers aren't having to donate their time and money if they don't want to, and vice versa. So
we'll give a quick shout out to the Wyndham Local Farmers Market.
Yes.
That has been a standout in bringing fresh produce to the Wyndham area. So when we were talking about how these operations actually are functioning, as in financing, the legwork that goes into it, we have two different approaches. So Laura, yours was donations from community members.
Yes.
So donation of product, financial donations, all of that was done directly from the people.
Yes.
So that's one way to make it happen. The food truck was a grant.
It was.
Mm-hmm. Which is another way to make it happen.
Yes, it is.
They are very different ways to make it happen.
Yes. Yes.
So, grants.
Yes. I think so.
Not to fall too far down the rabbit hole, right. But a large time investment.
Yes.
To effectively get the grant, mm-hmm. implement the grant.
Spend the money correctly.
Spend the money correctly. Yeah. So, Leah, you've spent time writing grants. Well, both of you have spent time writing grants.
Yes.
Fortunately, unfortunately. Laura's just off of writing a grant.
Yes, fresh off.
Yeah. You don't have to get into the nitty gritty of it, but maybe give us an idea of what the process is of just the time investment.
Yeah, absolutely. I spent this past year helping the Village of Stamford apply for a New York Forward grant, which is a downtown revitalization grant. And my efforts, it was an interesting process. It's a little bit different than some other grants, and it took a lot of research and understanding all of the ways that past investments in the village kind of led up to this moment. And there is a huge community involvement piece as well, which was really inspiring to me. So the grant is largely based on what the community actually wants for their village or town moving forward. So a lot of community meetings and a survey was done to get a better understanding of, okay, we know where we've been and now we need to see where we as a collective would like to go. So we're still in the waiting process with the grant. We have applied and we know that for a lot of communities, it has taken them multiple years, multiple tries. So we're hopeful, but you know, we're in a wait and see.
What was the preparation timeline on that?
So I began in April, and then we sent our application in October, and we had a presentation in December.
Okay. Yeah. What if you had to estimate the amount of time you put into that grant? just a rough estimate.
Oh man, I don't.
Weeks
even,
of my life.
Weeks. Yes. Yeah. Weeks. But yeah. I mean, I will say it was a great opportunity. It was a huge learning curve for me. I have some nonprofit experience. I have a background in sociology and in research, so I felt very at home with a lot of the community aspects and community surveying. That piece to me and understanding the data and all of that felt very natural. However, there were some parts that were challenging, which was a good learning moment. But I think it just really kind of gave me this new inspiration of, okay, we know that there's funding out there in many ways. And I think a lot of people look at grant writing as a very scary topic. I know I did. But once you get into it, there are steps to follow. And there are usually other communities who have already gone through the process. So I definitely learned a lot from other communities who have gone through it, their process and their applications, and there's a framework. So yeah, it was definitely empowering to see that if you see funding out there, you can go for it. But yes, there is a time investment and it doesn't always necessarily pay off. However, I will say, you know, whether we get the funding or not, I think just bringing the community together to ask where we want to go from here, you can't really put a price tag on that.
Absolutely.
So that aspect was, very empowering.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when you put people in a space like that where the focus is moving forward and prioritizing that, even if the grant doesn't play out or certain other areas don't play out, the fact that everybody's sitting in a room or a large portion of the community is sitting in a room and saying, we all want this.
Yeah.
And so even if well, my idea might be small, but it may be just one piece of the puzzle that, with or without the grant, a couple puzzle pieces fall into place, and that's the foundation that the community can start building off of. So, yeah, creating that kind of more of a collective mindset, which is something that we've kind of touched on, Evan and I, definitely a lot in personal conversations and a little bit on the podcast, is these are the people that you see every day. These are the people that you shop with, that shop with you, that you see at the gas station, that are on the boards in the town, that are on, constantly around you. And within the complexities of the world as a whole, those people are a lot more important than I think we've been putting effort into. And I think that's showing more with people, with younger people, I would say our generation, who's seeing that and maybe can't put a finger on it and are starting to prioritize that it is the person that's next door to you that's going to have the biggest effect on your life. So if you guys put each other in a space to say, hey, how can we do better? How can we collectively move forward? That's actually more of an impact on your life than some of the bigger problems that we find ourselves sulking over all day long.
Definitely. And I think in these small communities that we have all grown up in and are a part of, nowadays there's things like Facebook groups for our local towns. And I think it's really easy to get on there and maybe sometimes feel cynical about who might be around, or there can be some bickering. There's beautiful moments and people sharing each other's businesses and things like that. But to actually get people in real life, in a room, talking to each other. We actually, one of our meetings, we had up poster boards around the room. One of the people on our committee is a first grade teacher, retired first grade teacher. So she was great at organizing. And we have poster board around the room of different potential areas to work on. So say one example is like the local park needs some updating, and everybody moved around in these pods to name their ideas, and just seeing people move around the room, hearing them talk, I think a lot of people realize like, oh, we all kind of have similar ideas. And I mean, there's some people for sure who like really want a skate park and other people who don't. You're always going to have that sort of battle.
Yes, yeah, of course. We might know some people like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there's always that. But I think just when you're in real life with people, especially post pandemic times, it's, you know, you begin to realize that you're more alike than you are different.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Aaliyah, you spent a good amount of time writing grants.
Writing grants and
within, like, specifically within grants. Yeah.
Yes.
Writing them and implementing them within a nonprofit.
Right. Right. At the Edmund Niles Hike Preserve, where Laura and I were coworkers, I became the co-director and I was the director of administration and finance. And so it was my duty, once we got the grant, to track the expenses, track the time, track the deliverables.
As you're saying this, just for clarification, when you get a grant, it's not like someone comes in and hands you a stack of $100 bills that you can frivolously spend.
Most of them
on pizza parties
and
whatever else.
They are reimbursements.
They are reimbursements.
So you have to front the money.
And they are specifically allocated to certain classes, lessons, programs, very, very specific.
Very, very specific. And you kind of have to be the willow to the wind of like bending to what they want sometimes, not so much what you may be almost desperately in need of. You kind of find a grant like, okay, that kind of matches what we do need right now. And so let's see if we can kind of like contort it so it works for us. And that can be a challenge because you may not have the staff time to dedicate to it, or the staff expertise. And it is just always an uphill battle with grants, and also vying for the next round of grants, because a lot of grants are reoccurring. And you have to make sure that you present yourself in a way of like, yes, look at what we did. We didn't go over our deadline. We spent all the funds perfectly. Can you please give us another round? Yep. And that's very difficult to do because
you're not the only one going for
it. We are not the only ones going for it. And yep. I think that's another big issue in the world of nonprofits is that there's a lot of people vying for the same money and for the same grant, and that money may not be going to the destination that needs it most or could benefit from it the most. It's often goes to people that kind of have it together, right? Really well-oiled 501c3, and they can pull off a grant like that, which is great, but that's where it gets to be a challenge. And also you get a little jaded in the nonprofit world sometimes.
Well, it could be an interesting marriage between grants and private funding. I want to go back to what you said about what we were saying about the programs. Like it's allocated specifically for a program, so when you say that, what can it be spent on? So if you have a program, do you have an example of a program? Possibly. I could speak to one at the community center, but if you have one that, like, a program that you got a grant for, and specifically what you could spend those dollars on.
We would get a grant annually that would cover education at the hike preserve. So local elementary schools would come in, and we would host them for the day throughout the spring and throughout the fall. And we were able to spend money on salaries for people that we would hire part-time to come in to help out with those lessons. But we couldn't cover the people that were there the whole entire year, emailing the schools and making sure that the buses were getting there on time and putting in all of this legwork. That was never covered on a grant. And so that's just one kind of tiny example of how it was.
No, I think that's a huge example. Yeah. Because when you're in the nonprofit sector, that the very specific allocation of grants doesn't cover the most important people. Right. In the nonprofit, or, you know, in the programs, the people who are actually there on a daily basis, the ones who are actually organizing, the ones who would structure that program to bring people in.
Yes. Or train the people.
Yes. Right. You bring somebody in, you can pay that person to be there and possibly pay for their time to be trained and then their time there to administer a program. But the person who's giving them all that information and making all the calls and writing all the grants does not get paid from that grant, which I think speaks to a big point of, if you're looking for a reason to donate to a small nonprofit or program that you have locally, private donations are the ones that fund that fund the backbone and the structure of a nonprofit to allow them the time to apply for the grants.
The freedom
to apply for the grants.
Use that money to pay the electric, to pay their salaries.
To keep the Wi-Fi on.
Buy the stamps, all the things. Yes.
Keep the machine moving.
But that's hard. It's hard for local individuals who may not have a lot of money to donate towards their favorite causes or the causes that they see fit or a need for in their community to put that on.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a challenge in every small community, is how do you, it's the inspiration that, Laura, that you saw in the group thinks that you had, maybe it's a good starting point, because it's inspiring people to, man, that's such a difficult one to broach, is getting people moving on a base level. And it's like, It's not necessarily, I mean, it is donating, it is moving money to do it, but it's also like a very passionate base group of people to create the change as well.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And yeah. I think something that I noticed as a common theme between the period parties that mm-hmm. you hosted at Rockland Cider Works in Gilboa and also the Farm to Family Wheels in Schenectady is that they were moments in time where people gathered. It wasn't like, oh, I'm going to send in a check and it's going to go to this organization to do all the things that we just talked about, which is great. But to gather people around, come together, talk, listen to music, play games, eat food, mm-hmm. see your friends, see your neighbors. And but we're also going to put our energy towards doing this helpful thing, hopefully, for our community. And I think that's what gets people excited of like, oh, cool, I can actually go and be physically in my community and doing good and just seeing the people of Schenectady doing the same thing. That's not my community per se,
yep.
but to see the people turn up for their community,
yeah, it's front,
so inspiring.
It's front line.
Yeah, yeah, and they see yeah. every stop we would go to. It's, oh, how are you? Da, 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 da. It's like, this is so neat. I'm so happy to be.
So those were the people that were distributing with you.
Yes. So I am the truck driver and I pull up and then we open up. But then there are either school employees, teachers that volunteer after school or just community members that come to the back of the truck and pass out all this food that we have to move to a lot of people in a short period of time. But especially shout out to Christine. She is amazing. She would keep everybody in line and keep the line moving, but she knew so many people at every stop. And it was just like this soulful energy amongst their community. And I'd say same at Rockland, a little different, but.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It was, yeah, amazing to see the community come together and people, I think, were really happy to have a space to put their energy into, you know, menstrual health. And I heard a lot of people be like, oh, well, I care a lot about this, but I didn't, you know, I'm so grateful this is happening here because we need something like this here. And I think a lot of us know what the issues in our communities are. It's just sometimes a little bit challenging to know how to help if you, like you were saying, if maybe financial help isn't the first thing you can offer. But mm-hmm. I mean,
you can offer empowerment.
Absolutely. And just sitting there putting packs together. I mean, in that instance, too, it was incredible to hear people in public talking to each other about what kinds of products they use. Like, oh, have you ever tried this one? Mm-hmm. Have you ever tried that one? And like sharing information about it that you wouldn't, you know, sit down next to someone at a bar and bring that up, really. So it was in that specific case, pretty neat to see people connecting on that level and, yeah. and to know that it's going to the community. Like, you know, they either brought the products or they gave some money and they know it's directly getting to the hands of someone who needs it. I think that having that tangible result is helpful.
Right. Yeah, I think it's breaking. Were you gonna say something?
And I was just gonna touch on briefly that these are everybody eats, right? We all have to eat,
right?
And
yes.
half of us
hygiene
menstruate at yes. one point yeah. in our lives, and mm-hmm. so these are issues that cross borders,
yeah. yes,
boundaries,
absolutely,
yeah. And I think it's I think we're at a very very cool point in time where we have the opportunity to openly break down stigma, because I think looking at both of these points that you guys are talking about is like, they're both kind of stigma points.
Yes.
And being able to kind of break that down and say, this is, it's not up for really discussion of whether or not you need to eat or mm-hmm. whether or not you need hygiene products. It's not up for discussion. And the lack of education on it is disheartening, but that's why they're points that you take notice of.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Right. And I really like that in the public forum, you have an educator who is like, their whole life is education, and by opening up a door for them to educate everybody instead of just first grade, they know how to do that.
Yes.
Like, that's their life. Their life is sharing information. Their life is bringing growth and opportunity into a person. It most of the time is with little people.
Yeah.
And then you open that door for them to say, hey, we have a need for this in the whole community.
Oh, yeah.
And they're ready for that.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Also, first grade teachers are great at getting everyone to be quiet and listen. So that's very helpful. She was also my first grade teacher, so shout out Terry Clark.
Yeah, so you had flashbacks, Terry. And you're like, yeah, okay, yeah. Oh.
I'm listening.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but to the point of empowerment of the individual can all like that. The value of that can't be overstated.
Absolutely, and I think everyone has something that they bring to the table. We all have skills or these things we've developed, and you might not recognize it as, you know, a skill you could put to use in, you know, getting a grant or, you know, any community effort, but we all bring something to the table and have a unique perspective. And I think another piece to that grant in particular, I know Wyndham probably experienced similar. There, for the first time in Stanford's history in the past decade, there has been a rise in the population again. And that's, we're seeing that post-COVID, and people are moving to the area, which is great. But I think there's also maybe a little bit of distrust or unknowing of the other side, you know, locals versus people coming in. Yeah. And I think initiatives like these are great to get people together and just to hear what, you know, what people's opinions are. And so, these projects are a very good way to bridge that gap because, like I said, we all have something to offer. And when you're kind of stuck in maybe the othering, it's hard to see what that person has to offer. So,
yeah. Right. And it's a waste of energy.
Oh, yeah.
It's just an absolute time sink. Like, when we could be focusing on making everything better for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to the point of everybody having their own strengths is people that are coming into the area, that are moving into the area, are having a completely different experience.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, using this as an opportunity to empower them as well. And say, hey, awareness. If you're here and you're a part of this community, like, get involved.
Absolutely. And bringing people in. I mean, I think for me personally, a drawback to this area is how much people care about each other. And so I think the more that we can bring newcomers in who maybe don't have that same sense of community here, it can be a kind of isolating place. We live, you know, in the boonies a little bit. And so I think the more that we can find ways to come together and to, yeah, work on our towns and have spaces for people to collaborate and be together is just helpful for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the sharp end of the spear, both of you. So thank you both for taking the time.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you both so much. This is amazing that you're putting this on. And, you know, we're, Leah and I are obviously all about community. And I think just lifting each other up and sharing the great businesses and organizations that are around, it's really inspiring. So thanks for doing it.
Right. And it is, just like we were talking before, another place for people to gather in person and share ideas and uplift one another. So thank you.
Yeah. Cheers to that.
If you want more information or find out how to volunteer, reach out to Laura by email, laurapotteryoga@gmail.com or Instagram @laurapotteryoga. This is the Hear Here podcast, hosted by Jesse Novak, produced by Evan Gutcha. Thank you for listening.